and you're listening to WBAI in New York, the voice of truth since 1960.
And you're tuned to listener-sponsored radio, WBAI 99.5 FM in New York. This is Night Shift. I'm Mike Sargent. But tonight you're going to hear a show that was done almost literally 1 year ago when the pandemic began, and we weren't sure what was to come. So it's an interesting time capsule. Hopefully you'll sit back and enjoy it. This program is from the 13th of April, 2020. So stay tuned to a special rebroadcast of Night Shift.
How does it feel?
It feels like times have changed.
To be here, it is always appropriate to be here, contemplate. If you ever happen to be someplace and you contemplate, I'm not here, where are you? So in this moment, be here, wherever here happens to be. In this day and time, we have gathered together to contemplate, to dialogue this that is called...
Night shift again. 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 Night shift again.
I'll be damn late.
Now, where are my people? 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 Where are my people?
talking about it, and I have no idea. I have no idea. I have no idea why I'm here. I don't know what I'm doing, you know, talking about this. I saw something, they saw something. There was a lot of light. That's all I remember.
Suggest that you reach deep down inside yourself there and try and find something that'll keep you awake just a little while longer, because this transmission coming up may just rekindle your will to live.
This is Comm Central. Channel open for executive order AUC-3423.
Listen to this, boys.
Night shift again. Night shift again. Night shift again. Night shift again. Night shift again.
And you are tuned to listener-sponsored radio, WBAI, 99.5 FM in New York, and on the web at WBAI.org. And this is Night Shift, and as we say here on Night Shift, and have said for a long time, life is like science fiction. But considering how life is now, it seems that we were prophets, because life is certainly science fiction now. But there are a few things we're going to discuss. We're going to talk about what would happen if aliens were to come now. We're going to talk about what is to come politically and what's been set up already. We're watching the mess of what's going on here in America. But how much of this is preordained? How much of this was planned? There's all kinds of conspiracy theories out there. There's a documentary I've been raving about for weeks now that I've been waiting to come out. This hit just before the documentary was supposed to come out. It's a documentary called Slay the Dragon. It's so mind-blowing and eye-opening to me that you're changed after having seen it. A lot of it you may know or be aware of, but when you just see just how clear, there's just no turning back. But I do have somebody who has seen the documentary who's joining us. Leanne, are you there? Can you hear me?
I can hear you, and I am here.
And you are here. So let me ask you this now. Because the topic is gerrymandering and how that's going to lead into the life is like science fiction that we're dealing with right now and how it's led to where we are now, how would you describe seeing that movie to you? Did you find it eye-opening, angering, mind-blowing? What were your thoughts on that documentary?
You're not saving a lot of adjectives for me to describe it. You sort of took them all. But yes, we can start with eye-opening. We can start with educational, because if you're not necessarily in a state where a bunch of that has been done, you might have heard the term, you know, glossed over in the news. But this documentary really takes you through step by step. And so it is eye-opening, it's educational, and yes, it's angering. You know, it really does sort of rock what we think of as the foundation of what the power of our vote is supposed to be able to do, or at least what they tell us that it's supposed to be able to do in the press release that is America. So I it was a thing to watch, even though, you know, I needed to get a beverage afterwards.
Well, let me just say this. I have an interview because I interviewed the two filmmakers that made the film. Ooh. Again, I was just so fired up after seeing it, and I will say mm-hmm. in the interview some of how I felt, but I can't emphasize enough how much you realize that our democracy is a complete sham, and always has been. I mean, if you're a person of color, you've always felt, you know, land of the free, home of the brave, ha! Land of the free labor, home of the brazen. That's more, you know, if you're a person of color, Native American. But seeing this, seeing how technology can be applied to the inherent, incumbent flaws in our quote-unquote democracy, I thought was just very sobering. Would you agree with that statement?
Yes, yes. And I agree with the entire statement. You know, as a person of color, as a black woman in America, yeah, it's all been a sham. We've always known it's been a sham. But there was something in me that felt it was true for somebody. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And now they don't even get it. I'm like, wow, your vote don't count?
Well, listen, that's really
sorry,
what this
is. Completely year, negative?
No. Cynical, perhaps, arguably, but not negative. Here's the deal, though. You are tuned, like I said, to listener-sponsored radio. I'm Mike Sargent. This is Night Shift. I'm here with Leanne Lord. And we're going to have Joe Masseri calling in. We're going to talk about this film, Slay the Dragon, which is right now streaming. It's everywhere, and don't miss it. I'm an evangelist for this film because I think, you know, everybody needs to see this movie. But I'm going to play the interview, and I want you to listen to it. I've sent you a copy, Leanne, so you could listen along. And then we're going to come back. We're going to talk about it a little bit. Joe Masseri, like I said, will be here. We're also going to talk about another documentary called Close Encounters of the Fifth Kind. Now, if you completely think people who believe in UFOs are, you know, bonkers anyway, you know, and that's one conversation. But what I want to look at, and this is the science fiction part, because it's kind of hard in a way to with the reality we're facing, to have anything that is science fiction. Like, how do you beat what we're dealing with? How do you get anything more fantastical or pre-apocalyptic than what we're dealing with? But we're going to go there. One of the things about being in the pandemic that we're in now and the coronavirus is that it dominates the news. There are a lot of things that are going on outside of how we're affected by the coronavirus. And politically, if you're paying attention, you'll see that they've relaxed EPA laws and that they're passing different laws and there's different legislation. And if you look closely at what's happening with the stimulus package, what corporations are getting it, and you look at the people who are in charge and where resources are being allocated and where they are not. What Slay the Dragon does is peel back the layers of gerrymandering, at the same time revealing exactly how things are run in this country from a political standpoint. How did we get where we are? How can there be such a strong conservative agenda across a nation that's come so far in many other respects? Is it just that New York, L.A., big cities are just a bubble? Are conservatives voting more than Democrats or liberals? Looking at what just happened in Wisconsin, where people had to risk their lives to go out and vote, where government can vote remotely to vote that citizens cannot vote remotely. How deeply corrupt is this process? Will the Republicans stop at nothing to block voting, to suppress voting, to influence voting? The answer is sadly yes. And the answer is actually scarier than you might have thought. I got a chance to speak to the filmmakers, Barrick Goodman and Chris Durrance, about making this extremely important film. I told them that I felt this was such an important film that every citizen in this country over the age of 13 should see it. It should be required viewing, just to have an understanding of not only the political process, but how easily it can be corrupted. I went further to tell them that I walked away from the film feeling that our entire democracy is a sham. Any democracy that can include things like gerrymandering or lobbying, all those things that completely corrupt the democratic process. Barrack told me that the inspiration for the documentary Slay the Dragon came when he picked up a copy of Rat Effed, and that's not, it's got two asterisks between the F and the K, subtitled Why Your Vote Doesn't Count, by David Daley. And it talks about Red Map, which is a national plan by a group of political strategists to use dark money, big data, and the power of redistricting to remake the electoral map in order to reestablish the Republican dominance in the wake of Barack Obama's 2008 presidential victory. Prior to that, in 2016, he had been asking himself questions about what was going on in this country.
How did we get here? How did we get so polarized? How did we get so, how did these politicians get so sort of impervious to the will of the people? And this book just explained it to me. I came to Chris and I said, listen, we got to do this. This is an amazing story. We didn't quite know how we do it because it is a little wonky, but we found some stories that really kind of made it dramatic and moving. And yeah, it was just, it was for me, it was a such a wake-up call about our political system.
Looking at this, it makes you not only understand why neither party has gone for voter reform. Even when Gore lost, who, you know, I respect obviously the environment, but he could have been an advocate for voter reform, but nobody is because it's corruptible and both sides have an advantage.
Yeah.
Staying that way.
The Republicans figured out how to weaponize gerrymandering. They figure out how to make it a national strategy to rig the system and tilt the playing field in their direction all over the country. You can sort of point fingers at Republicans. They outsmarted the Democrats, pure and simple. It's not that they're more, Democrats are more virtuous. They just weren't as much on the ball. The whole thing stinks to high heaven. And what our film is, the main story in our film is this dramatic contest between a grassroots small d democracy movement and a corrupt, big money, you know, incumbent protection racket. And the drama in our film is who's going to win that. And the stakes couldn't be higher.
You know, what's so scandalous, what's so pernicious about gerrymandering is with high-powered computers and with all the data that's floating around about all of us, our shopping habits, our age, our income, the jobs we have, the places we frequent, all of that data can be compressed now into these databases, sold to political groups, and they can start analyzing it. And then what they do is they pick the voters they want. And what this means is that they can stay in power, not just through one election, not just two elections, but for 10 years. Because this is all done on the back of the census. So in the 0 year, so 2010, and you'll notice we're talking in 2020. So this census is hugely important. In 2020, this is what's going to be happening in the back rooms. Everyone in all the pundit class is going to be talking about the primaries, talking about the presidential election. But the smart money is on the redistricting because that gives you 10 years in power.
This answers the question, how is it that we have representatives who don't represent us?
Right.
How do they represent corporate interests.
They have nothing to fear from the voters. Basically what gerrymandering is it draws lines, district lines, that make it so that these incumbent politicians can't lose, essentially. They choose their own voters, in essence. It's not a perfect system, but it weights the election strongly in favor of whoever's drawing the lines. So if they don't have to worry about losing their seats, they don't care what you think out there. And so you get these bizarro, in the last 10 years, very conservative bills passed through state legislatures, like the bathroom bill in North Carolina, or like these pro-gun bills. They're so out of whack with the sentiment of the voters, even in their own states, because they don't care. They're not in jeopardy of losing their seats. And when you sever that connection, you're basically giving a free rein to whatever political party is in control of drawing the maps.
Yeah, and it's not just those bills. It's also crises like the Flint water crisis, as we show at the beginning of the film. I mean, this is, you can trace that line directly between the gerrymandering that happened in Michigan, that disconnect that Barrack was talking about between voters and the politicians, just totally severed, and then the result there is that tragedy in Flint.
Yeah.
And well, why is it not over? Because in Michigan, you know, despite the 2012 blowout for Democrats, despite the 2018 blowout for Democrats, who controls the state legislature in Michigan? the Republicans still, on the basis of those maps that they drew in 2010 to serve their own interests. That's why it's not sorted out.
We as human beings, and I think it's maybe our survival instinct, we can normalize anything. You know, if I said to you, oh, did you hear about, you know, this black person got shot by a cop, unarmed, you say, which one? It's normal now, yeah. You know, so there are so many things that we normalize. Do you think, or what do you hope can happen with this film? And are you worried that people go, wow, that's cool, pass this off?
It's a great question, and you're absolutely right. I do think, though, that people, and this is what we've encountered in screenings and where we've run around, that people do have a fundamental sense that our elections should be fair and that their vote should count equally. And that's not the case anymore. But they do get pissed off if one party or the other is tilting the playing field so that some people's votes count more than others. And this is the wonderful thing we saw play out in Michigan, which is the heart of our film, a grassroots campaign in Michigan to take redistricting away from the politicians and give it to ordinary citizens. And that campaign caught fire because people of both parties were sick and tired of these politicians playing games. You know, all the games playing that goes on is directly connected to gerrymandering, and the same people are doing it. And when we point out those connections, people tend to leave the theater, A, pissed off, B, inspired to do something. And that's what we want for this film, to get people active, engaged, out there. This is the way we're going to stop this from happening.
Reading this book, making this film, you know, how has it changed your perspective or your desire for change?
Yeah, another really good question. I mean, honestly, as filmmakers and as journalists, you're trained to be objective, right? You're trained to sort of see all the arguments. But in a way, this was different for us. This film was a piece of activism. It was... you can't help but be frustrated and angry when you enter this world and to see the imbalances and to see, you know, the unfairness of it, to see how people are hurt. Flint is a great example. And yet, we happen to fasten on a character, a few characters, who really are inspiring and just, you know, get you out of your seat and, you know, just fill you with reassurance that our democracy isn't, it might be a little bit broken, but it is far from dead. There's still vibrancy, there's still ways you can fight back. And in the end, I think people leave the theater or wherever they're watching it feeling uplifted because there is something you can do. You know, it's not a dead end. And it will be hard. Power doesn't give up power easily.
In the film is this young activist she becomes an activist. She has a political neophyte when she starts out, but called Katie Fahey. And I hope more and more people get to become familiar with that name because she is truly a special, special person. And we were so lucky to find her very early on.
This is Night Shift, and we were just playing an interview with the directors of a new film called Slay the Dragon, which is about gerrymandering. And why it's important, hopefully, is something that is apparent in the topic. We're in an age now where we've willfully given away our civil rights because it's a good reason, because as a pandemic, we've given away our civil liberties. And that's a good thing, right? Meanwhile, in the background, if anybody's paying attention, they confiscated Rihanna's ventilators. There are reports of the government's coming in and taking medical supplies. There are reports of if you don't get along with this president, that means that he won't send you the supplies you need. So people are literally dying because of the politics, because of being on one side or the other. And this is the science fiction part, and I know that Joe Masseri is going to, and probably Leanne as well. You know, human beings are all the same if you stand back. Like, from the science fiction point of view, this is just what humans do. Humans doing what they do. Meanwhile, we have the xenophobia we have here in China. You don't want to be African right now. So, life is really not the kind of science fiction movie that you really want to be in. So... saying that now, Leanne, did you get a chance to listen to the interview? Leanne, are you still there?
No, I hear. I out of courtesy, muted my microphone. My apologies.
Okay, okay. No worries, no worries.
I did hear the interview, and I was quite jealous that you got opportunity to talk to them.
Yes, they were great. They were great.
The subject.
And Joe Masseri, are you there? Are you with us, Joe Masseri?
I am here.
Joe Masseri. You are here. So, first of all, now, did you get to hear the interview?
Yes, I did.
All right, so you didn't get to see the movie, but you know about gerrymandering. What are your thoughts just on the concept that we could have a democracy that includes gerrymandering?
Well, you know, it's been interesting because the consumer news that I am, it was Donald Trump who recently turned around and said that you know, he doesn't want to go for mail-in ballots or anything like that, you know, and with the coronavirus and the way things went down in Wisconsin, that he feels that if that was allowed to happen, that the Democrats would never win another election.
Well, of course he says that, but that's a lot of hooey. I mean, for Michelle Obama to get involved and start saying, yeah, we need to have mail-in elections. Did you see what the governor of Governor Virginia, Ralph Northam, he just signed into law a measure establishing Election Day as a holiday, eliminating voter ID requirements, and expanding early voting to 45 days before the election.
I think now, more and more why he's saying things like, you know, certain restrictions.
The Republicans. So wait, did you mean to say the Republicans would never win another election? Because you said the Democrats would never win.
No, he said if he allowed for you know, if they curtail. Right.
Well, that's just double plus ungood. That's just double plus ungood.
And, you know, did what they did in Wisconsin that the.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. All right. Yeah, he said.
Republican. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. He's just said a lot of hooey. Leanne Lort.
Hooey is an underutilized word. I'm really glad to hear that making a comeback.
Well, you know, just on this show or in talking about this presidency. Now, what are your thoughts now? I mean, when you watch the movie, you sit, for me anyway, I sat there thinking like, yeah, you know, I mean, not that I haven't thought this, but like, you know, all of it, like, it's so corruptible. Now it's been completely co-opted. Like, name something else in our society. I mean, both of you, I want to know, what are your thoughts on the fact that he got rid of the oversight committee so that they can give the money to whatever corporations they want without any oversight from anybody, like trillions of dollars? What are your thoughts on that?
It sounds like kind of par for the course. Yeah, it's just, I guess what's hard for me is that it's just so blatant. You know, I remember when people did bad stuff and they tried to hide it. It wasn't out in
That's
the open,
because we've normalized
it. In the Rose Garden. It was like, I'm going to do this. So the facts are in my head. That I'm going to be the judge. I know we need an oversight committee. I'm going to do this. Like, what, sir? How are you familiar with the word democracy? Can you spell the word democracy?
Yes, I could spell it M-O-N-E-Y. M-O-N-E-Y. That's how you spell democracy.
This is very challenging to what I was raised to believe, even as a black woman, what democracy was supposed to be. You know, I want to disagree with something you said earlier that most humans, or maybe director said this, that humans are fundamentally fair. We're not. We're really not.
No,
we're
the director said that, not me.
It would be our fault if the dolphins left. I wouldn't blame them if you are a Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy fan. So long and thanks for all the fish.
Joe Masseri, any thoughts on this? Do you think all humans are bad? I just want to know. I mean, I want you to finish, Leanne, but I just want to know. Like, Joe, are you going to stand up for humanity?
Basically, they did a test out of MIT and Stanford where they created these logarithms based on psychological profiles. And if people are placed in certain situations, we're basically...
Revert back to Lord of the Flies.
No, we don't. We don't. We have to, we basically, if we are put into a situation, can be fair and objectuate. Let's take
reality, and the entire reality TV genre wouldn't exist if that were true. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yes, but a lot of those situations are manipulated as well. So, you know, they're up in the ante. It's not an unbiased scientific, you know, like they do the tests and how they conduct them kind of thing. Basically,
yeah, I don't think we can reach to or point to reality TV as the
Go ahead.
But, you know, at the end of the day, if you look at certain situations, like, look what's going on. I watched this interview that had been done with the Chinese ambassador to the United States, and this gentleman on this news program was interviewing him about those centers that they had created in China, which were basically these detention camps for Muslims, and...
Dude, do you know what's going on with Africans in China right now?
No, I do not.
See, it's something that would escape your notice. And again, this is just also to say about what's happening in the world. Where if you just put into Google, China kicking out Africans, and just see what comes up, okay?
Can I just take a step back? Even from that, because I am aware. Well, aware in terms of I've heard the headlines. And
well,
Being evicted from their home, from their homes, hotel rooms, whatever, because the Chinese people think that they are, you know, carriers of the virus.
All right, you broke up there, Leanne.
What humans do? Humans going to human. Human. And what I mean is we're going to tribalize and blame them. And we do it out of fear every single time without fail.
Just in case you're wondering, you are listening to a rebroadcast of a Night Shift show from 1 year ago. So stay tuned. Hopefully you're enjoying this little time capsule of Night Shift and hearing what the world was like. 1 year ago, 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 1 year ago. Well, Joe says that if we're down to it, we're going to be fair. This doesn't sound fair to me, Joe. Mm-mm. This doesn't sound fair. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to read now. Joe doesn't know about it. I'm just going to read how it's being portrayed in the media. These are just headlines. Headline from CNN. Beijing faces a diplomatic crisis, not a humanitarian crisis, a diplomatic crisis after reports of mistreatment of Africans in China causes outrage. This is about 4 hours ago on CNN, okay? An hour ago on Business Insider, check this out. Contextualize it. McDonald's China apologized after service refused to black customers. Okay? So, you know, if I go to international news, I'll go to international news headlines. This is from France24.com. If you're black, you can't go out. Africans in China face racism. So what's happening here? You know, in those science fiction movies, humanity comes together. We're all dying. We all can die. Doesn't matter what color we are, we're going to die. But that's not what's happening. As we are reverting to the Leanne. What?
For the record, that was only Independence Day. I'm just saying. Everywhere else, we tribalized and tried to figure it out on our own. But is that honestly any different than what is happening to Americans or immigrants of Asian descent Asian appearance in America?
No.
It's not.
No.
We, out of fear, out of anger, out of ignorance, we scapegoat. That's what humans do. I don't understand.
Now, you see, that's the science fiction perspective.
In America, in the world, on how we have better human relations. Humans fail at humanity every single time.
But they do more often, Joe Masiri, in horror movies. They're not stupid. They are human. This is what humans do. Listen, I've seen every zombie incarnation. They throw somebody to the zombies. right.
They're just stupid.
I think even as an ardent science fiction fan, we sometimes cannot use that playbook for everyday life. As much as it pains me to say that, because I do think Star Trek is a valuable playbook. But yeah, I'm not looking at 28 days later for how I deal with this pandemic. Because if that were the case, I'd be working out every day and working on my gym game so I'd be able to run faster. Maybe that's not a bad idea. Sorry.
No, you need to watch Zombieland so this way you can get the zombie playbook.
Exactly. Joe definitely has the zombie playbook. He's an editor on the zombie playbook. All right, but Joe, back to you. So you defend humanity here. You think that the scientific tests show that, you know, we're headed towards a better, you know, after all this hell we're going through, the xenophobia here, globally, I'm just only using China as a recent example, and we all know what's happening here in America.
If you put that on pause 1 second, I think we have to look at the bigger picture with China, because look what happened to the one doctor who was persecuted by
the doctor
for blowing the whistle early on the coronavirus and then becoming sick on it. There have been reporters who were over there reporting on what was going on, and which was contradicting what the Chinese government was reported, and you know, these guys disappeared. Nobody knows where these journalists are.
Did you watch that Chernobyl miniseries?
Yeah,
I did.
Okay, I mean, all right. So every government lies to its people. That's just part of what governments do.
Right. So
every government, beings are the same all over the planet.
But the whole thing is that the government and the political people in power are trying to protect their power. They're trying to influence the people and spread
back
fear
to gerrymandering
and
back
xenophobia and the like in order to protect their nationalism.
Yes. So what's your point? Clearly,
it's not
that's
the
what they're
people.
Doing.
It's not the people.
Oh,
we're
the people
about
in power.
People
yes,
left to
you're
their
right.
own devices.
Joe? Good point. Well, I don't know. So you're saying, okay, so you were basically giving the distinction between, you're saying people in general, human beings en masse, are pretty good. It's the ones who end up at the top, the ones who are running things, are the most evil among us. So evil reigns.
Look, you know, if you look at all the quotes about religion.
That was a yes or no question, Joe. That was a yes or no question.
And then other people and all this stuff. Politics in a time of crisis is no different than religion. People in a crisis turn to their politicians and they're looking for answers. If you just look at the Trump rallies and the people who are wearing MAGA hats, you're looking at disenfranchised people who were given this dogma and doctrine, and it's not even true, you know, promises that weren't even delivered on, just like any religion kind of thing. It, you know, instead of being truthful and honest, it's just power. It's just power trying to preserve and hold on to power.
But what else is new, Joe? That, I mean, clearly,
I'm not saying
that's
it's new. I'm just saying if you look at what's been happening in the pandemic and how people have been coming together outside of the government, you know, from the people at 7 o'clock who go outside and cheer on
Do you feel that's the majority, and that's New York? Do you feel that's the majority? I mean,
look at the donations that were made by different companies and corporations, from, you know, meals and food to masks.
Okay. I gotta pause you there. I gotta hear Leanne, your thoughts on all this beautiful, wonderful humanness.
Humanity, being human, is not one thing. There are moments of beauty and community, absolutely. And then there are what I call WTF moments, where you can be absolutely at your worst. The frightening thing is that every person has that range of capacity of action and feeling. Which one are you choosing at a particular moment And I think what is required of our leaders, those who claim to be in charge, is to facilitate the former. How can we be our best with each other more than we are our worst? That's in there. The worst is going to be there because we're not perfect beings. So when pushed, when against the wall, when fearful, when you're trying to feed your family, when you're just trying to have a safe place to be and exist, you're going to be pushed to do things. And I'm not even talking about at this point people that do things out of mental illness. I'm not even including that, or people who are
right,
just
so you're not talking about the present. You're not talking about the present.
No, I never talk about the current occupants of the White House. He is the most dangerous virus that America and the world has to fight right now. I can't even wrap my head around what's happening in the Rose Garden. But if you as a human being don't find American human being with voting power who does not vote, and I guess this now gets back to the documentary, me still believing that my vote matters. And I would like to think on the federal level it does. You can't gerrymander that.
Listen, that you're banging the desk. I hear you. By the way, I hear you banging the desk, just so you know.
I'm sorry.
I know. You're into it. I understand.
Yeah. No, this is the fundamental core of who we are supposed to be as Americans. We are supposed to be emblematic of what democracy is, and we are failing. Now this
Joe, wait. Okay, go ahead, stay there, Joe. Go finish what you're saying, Leanne, before you go, Joe. Go ahead. This documentary
gives us information. And in giving us information and giving us insight in pulling the curtain and us seeing the man behind the curtain, it gives us hope and the ability to act. So it is not all gloom and doom, but man, do we have our work cut out for us when all I want to do is watch Star Trek on Netflix.
Joe Masseri.
Look, I mean, one of the things that's been very interesting, and you know, John Oliver did a really good piece on the whole gerrymandering issue, is that the way the law is structured right now, that, and in some states it has been done where it's a Democratic state, the Democrats can take an abuse of that system as it exists as well, and in some instances have. The problem is that, you know, like you were just talking about, and I forget what state you said it was, the governor there who turned around and declared it a holiday.
Virginia.
You know, that's what we need to do. It's like Citizens United and money that's invested into these campaigns and stuff. There has to be a more dramatic change to get back to where we were from what the founding fathers originally conceived. And until we do, it's all about greed, money, and power.
I don't invoke the founding fathers there. I'm not a big fan of the slave owners, the founding fathers, or whatever. But I do think that there is a vision of America that has yet to be unfulfilled. It has always been a fantasy. It has always been, unfortunately, a fallacy. But I agree with the notion that what we should be headed towards, we should be leading. We should be thought leaders. We should be leaders in how to live, as opposed to stuck in a mire of a quagmire of this, you know, all the things that we're in now that showed that we are not, in my opinion, an advanced culture.
Can I insert something very relevant here? I'm waiting for an acknowledgement, if that's okay.
Yes, please.
Okay. I am the new co-host for another podcast, Mike, please don't be mad at me, called Point of Inquiry.
There are no other podcasts.
There are no other radio shows. I'm on no other shows.
There's nothing else to listen to.
Not at all.
Okay.
Not at all. That said, long-running show from, I think, from 2011 or so, and I'm the new co-host for it. And this is only relevant because my first episode debuted last week, and that episode, my first episode, is with an author. His name is Kurt Anderson, and he wrote a book called Fantasyland, How America Went Haywire, a 500-year history. And we talked about how Fantasyland imaginary thinking is not new, and particularly very affected lack of response to this pandemic. But we tend to think that, you know, this fantasy thinking originated in our lifetimes, you know, or we go back to the 60s. No. He takes it all the way back to Jamestown. Like, that is a founding of this nation. People kept coming here to find gold when there was demonstrably no gold. I mean, it if you wanted to have fantastical thinking or build your mythical empire, here was the place to do it, and it reinvented itself every decade and every century. So what we're going through now, while horrific, is not new. It's just that our fantasy is coming up with a hard stop on reality. There we go.
So reinventing ourselves. So we're sort of like the Madonna of the developed world, you're saying. We just keep reinventing ourselves.
Well, it's kind of hard to invoke Madonna because the 80s were such a carefree time.
Listen, so were the 60s and 70s. They had smoking sections on planes. Come on, tell me that wasn't a carefree time. Joe Masseri, I do have a question for you.
Yes.
One of the other films we talked about, Leanne only got to watch a little bit of it, is a film called Close Encounters of the Fifth Kind. We're going to talk about it in a little while. I do want to play quickly the trailer for Slay the Dragon, which I just want to emphasize. We've been talking about gerrymandering. It's a new documentary that I highly recommend. I really can't emphasize enough. So take a listen to the trailer, and then we're going to come back and talk about Close Encounters.
As important as 2008 was, 2010 was to be a more important election. 2010 is a census year, and we redistrict every state and congressional seat following the census.
You win state legislation in 2010, you get to draw the new maps that control all the elections over the next decade.
The winner is pre-decided just by the way that the districts are drawn.
Even under the scenario of the Democrats winning the vote by the biggest margin they've ever won in modern Wisconsin history, the Republicans would still get 59 seats minimum. That's an astonishing manipulation of democracy.
Congress would never fix this problem because they have one interest only, and this is to stay in power.
It's the biggest heist in modern American political history.
I'm Katie Fahey. I'm with an organization called Voters Not Politicians. We started from a Facebook post. I saw that there was a pent-up energy, so I just thought I'd, yeah, try.
First there was 10,000, then there was 20,000, and this thing just sparked.
We're working with the anti-gerrymandering drive.
They're absolutely worried about us. They know that once this gets on the ballot, it almost always passes.
This is going to be the battlefield moving forward. If they lose, it's no holds barred.
There will be a vicious fight by the people who are in power.
We are seeing efforts to undermine the very core values of American democracy. This may be the last time we have an opportunity to do something about partisan gerrymandering.
The people of our country are sick of this, and if we don't come and say that enough is enough, then nothing's going to change.
And like I said, the film is called Slay the Dragon, and it's playing now, streaming everywhere. You can watch it on just where whatever you watch, it's there. And part of what we're talking about here is not just gerrymandering, but just the whole notion of a lack of accountability. You know, say what you will, be on whatever side you want. You know, there is such a lack of accountability that we've become you know, used to, that's become normalized, that the we're watching our, not just our civil liberties and, you know, things that we expected the government to do and to stand for and whatnot. Even in the media, this is the same type of thing has happened. What was once news is now more opinion and entertainment than actual journalism. So, Joe Massiri, my question to you is, the last part of gerrymandering is, does it scare you, the idea of having such a lack of accountability? I mean, I know you haven't seen the documentary, but just knowing that, I'll say this, that now, instead of just redrawing the maps, they can apply an AI to redrawing the maps so that no matter what the scenario is, they will never lose. Does that scare you? Does that concept scare you?
Well, anytime that artificial intelligence and logarithms and all that gets involved, it does become scary, because it basically, you know, destroys the human condition. There's no more, you know, he who has the money to control the power and the knowledge has the power to control the spin on everything. It's just like the logarithms in the stock market and stuff, where they're like the micro trades that are done now and such. You know, who does that give a fair advantage to? Only the rich that can afford it, kind of thing. So, at the end of the day, it should be left up to what it should be left up to, which is basically, you know, the census and fair districting.
Yeah, but the census is the tool they use to district in the way they want. That's the whole point. It's the tool. That's the beauty of it. It's a beautiful system, Joe. It's like they get all this information and they're like, okay, great. They literally, you can live, half your block is separated because that half of the block has more one than the other. That's how exact it is. And you have to see the documentary. Let me just ask you, Leanne, knowing, you know, Joe, I feel demurred from saying whether he's scared. He said what it should be. I'm asking you directly, seeing this, does that scare you at all?
That, give me what the that is, whole question.
Well, I'll boil it down to that. The idea that people can put into place systems where they'll never lose and they never have to be accountable, and that we're in the process of setting that up for the next 10 years.
My short answer is yes. I will admit that there was, for most of my life, I've always thought that our biggest problem as a species is education. One of my favorite quotes is human history becomes more and more a race between education and catastrophe. And yet, I believe that's H.G. Wells. And yet, it is best and our brightest from humanity, most disconnected from what fair play is. And you have to now ask the question, who's right?
All right, you totally dropped off. Yeah, wait, you have to back, say that again. You have to ask the question, what?
All right, you're totally. Ask the question.
Yes.
Can you hear me? Okay.
I hear you now.
You have to ask the question, very big, simple question. Who's writing the algorithms? How can, if they're written by things who have existing biases, who have unconscious biases, who have different upbringings and experiences, and they're writing algorithms that affect people beyond them, and I'm not sure if we have gotten to that point. We're trusting the algorithms, and we really shouldn't be, because I will go as far as saying it is institutionalized racism on another level. And so the fact used.
All right, you broke up again, unfortunately. The fact that what? You broke up. Start over again. I'm sorry.
The fact that they are using science and algorithms to solidify power is frightening. It is absolutely frightening to me. It tells me that if you're so afraid of playing fair, then you're not on the right side of history. Here's a crazy thought. What if your
democracy was democracy? Okay.
No. What if your true power is in how many people you helped, how many people you fed, how many people you made sure were safe, how many people you made sure had homes? What level of power would you have and dedication and following from people that you helped? That, to me, is true power. In my limited opinion, you can't, to me, you know, garnering it for selfish reasons, yeah, okay, that's fine. But when you can point to the thousands or millions of people that you helped, who wouldn't come to your aid? Who wouldn't make sure that you stayed in a position to help? FDR, come on now. How did we not learn that lesson properly? I know this isn't funny, but this is just my observations from my limited view from, you know, my quarantine in my little home office.
Tunes to listener-sponsored radio, WBAI, 99.5 FM in New York and on the web at WBAI.org. This is Night Shift. I'm here with Leanne Lord, Joe Massiri. I'm Mike Sargent, and this is where life is like science fiction. Joe Massiri, you still there?
I am here.
All right, so let me ask you a question. I don't even have to ask Leanne's answer to this, but we've discussed, you know, having why are you making noise, Joe? Hello? Joe?
Yeah, I'm here.
What happened? Yeah, what happened? Are you passing out, Joe? You sound like you were dying there for a second.
It dropped.
Oh, okay. All right, because that sound was like, this is my last breath, Mike. All right, so it was like, okay, Joe dies on the air. Okay, so my question to you, Joe, is looking at, you know, in an area age like this, and I always relate a lot of this kind of storyline to Colossus, the Forman Project, which is one of my favorite films, science fiction films. But Colossus, the Forman Project was based on three novels, and the second novel, after Colossus, which was this massive computer that took over the planet along with another massive computer by another superpower, and they ran human beings completely. But the very next book was called Colossus and the Crab, and in that one, aliens land. Now that computers are running humanity, and AI is running humanity, aliens land. So my question to you, Joe, is, in this time, and one of the things that's put forth in the documentary, Close Encounters of the Fifth Kind, which I thought was part of the most compelling and the most realistic, you know, whether or not you believe in aliens or not, is just that, okay, the government has their own agenda and their own you know, way they'd like to put out the messaging of alien contact and how we should respond to it. What are your thoughts on that? And what do you think would happen now if the aliens were to land in the middle of this pandemic?
Well, it's alien gerrymandering is what it is. It's the government turning around and
alien gerrymandering. All right, I like that concept.
Yes, because we don't want to give up power. We don't want people to believe that, you know, there are these all benevolent aliens who want to make contact with people who are benevolent and loving of their world. Yeah,
benevolent, universe. Benevolent.
So, you know, so everything is, you know, aliens and Independence Day and, you know, all this stuff so that basically you create this division in the population to be suspect of what their actual intentions might be so that there is a fear of the other.
According to what Leanne says, that's just human nature to kind of tribalize and otherize and blame something else. So let me ask you, Leanne, that you only got to see the beginning of the documentary. A, do you believe in aliens? B, do you think the government would just lie to us about their existence? And C, do you think they've been benevolent or do you think they would have hostile intent?
Okay, that's a three-part question.
Yes, it is.
In science fiction terms, absolutely. It is great for books and drama and films. Do I really believe there is extraterrestrial life? No, I don't. To the point that
how could you not believe there are aliens?
Stop.
Very cynical. Stop. Very cynical.
Stop. I finished my thought.
I'm going to send my spaceship over there.
I would hold that to the same level of scientific proof as I would anything else. Okay. So that's the answer to the first part of your question. Your second part two of your question was, do I believe the government would lie? Abso-freaking-lutely. As a science fiction movie fan, that is the government's first and appropriate response. They gonna come on Facebook and go, yeah, they real, y'all. I mean, come on. They can't even manage the fear from the uncertainty of an Earth-born virus. How are we going to deal with aliens? Yes, they're going to lie if they're real. The third part, I lost thread. What is the part?
The third part is, are they benevolent or do you think they have hostile intent?
This is complete speculation. If there are aliens,
obviously, unless you're an alien,
we cannot speak to their intentions. Even if you are able, if we are able to communicate with them, okay. What is again? Are the spider's intentions hostile to the fly? And again, that's a very subjective way of
putting it. I'd say yes, it is. Yes, it is. Yes, it is. The spider's intention is hostile to the fly. Yes, it is.
Yes.
Now, should we judge the morality of it? No. But is it hostile? No. Yes.
I mean,
yes. Yes, it is.
I
guarantee you get the vote of a lot of flies would agree with me.
Hold on. Could it be alien Care Bears who want nothing but the best for us? I would contend
we can't
even conceptualize that because we're going to judge them by our worst characteristics. Because I agree.
We anthropomorphize everything. So absolutely. But I do feel that one of the things that this documentary does, and I would love to know Joe's thoughts on this, is he talks about the science of mind And the science of mind would be, you know, yeah, if you've evolved to the point where you don't have to worry about certain social mores and racism and prejudice and starving and disease and all that, what would a culture focus on? And it would have to focus on, you know, higher learning, you know, what might be called enlightenment, but at the very least, understanding the context of the universe, how to travel through time and space, and all the things that would make sense if you didn't have to worry about other stuff, what we would work on. The stuff that, you know, people... Let me finish. So, he talks about how, in order to get there, it would clearly require us going to another level of let's just say... another mental level than we are on our day-to-day living. So he talks about meditation. Now, I'm curious, Joe, since you've seen the documentary, what are your thoughts on that? Do you agree with the hypothesis, whether you believe they're here or not, and whether you were there really making contact? Does it make sense to you that the aliens, A, would have evolved to the point where it would be ridiculous for them to have hostile intent? Why would they be out here looking to do something to us if they can travel through time and space? And C, the science of mind, that it would have to be some sort of power that comes from our ability to control our own consciousness and context within the universe. And just in case you're wondering, you are listening to a rebroadcast of a Night Shift show from 1 year ago. So stay tuned. Hopefully you're enjoying this little time capsule of Night Shift and hearing what the world was like 1 year ago, 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 1 year ago.
Well, one of the things that they talk about in the documentary of the speed of light versus the speed of thought, something that's faster than light. So obviously, in order for them to make contact with other civilizations that may or may not be out there, there needs to be some kind of faster space travel in light, because we talk about, you know, the hundreds of thousands of light years that it takes to get to, you know, stars within our own galaxy, number one. Number two, you know, when you think about some of the stuff that they talk about, and I think Dr. Stephen Greer, who is the main focus of the CE5, which I found was interesting. He is a man of science that comes from, you know, this left scientific rationale, and then through the documentary and through his thinking comes to this, you know, point of spirituality in terms of mind over matter and mind over body and positive thinking. And there are other things that are mentioned in the documentary, which in a conversation we had after viewing that, there's the other documentary called What the Bleep Do We Know, where at one point in that documentary, when they're talking about physics and string theory and all that, they also touch upon the point about how our minds influence the observable universe. So right then and there, in the basic rudiments of physics, is the potential for our minds to influence reality. And what they say in the documentary, which I totally agree with, because there have been other studies done about positive energy and getting into a collective and putting that out there, that, you know, you can reshape and redefine things. And what's preventing us, that I agree with totally now, I totally agree with what they put forth at the beginning of the documentary about how we've become this negative society. And I think it's even influenced Leanne, because she, I don't know, when I first met her, she seemed like a much more happy person.
She's not happy. She has been on Earth for too long.
But here's the thing,
I have always been a glass half empty person. To get to the other side of the glass,
but as a child,
she needs both sides. They're like the wings of a bird, you know. Oh, everything's fine, and then you crash into the side of a mountain. You need that person that goes, "Hey, let's course correct." So I think both are needed. Carry on, gentlemen.
But what I was going to say is that one of the things that they put out there that, you know, the whole idea of meditation and doing this, from a theological and philosophical point of view, they are right that, you know, you just can't say one day I'm going to sit down and I'm going to meditate. First of all, you need to have.
Well, first of all, he's got an app. We could make contact with the aliens right now on the show. He's got an app for making contact with the aliens.
No, it's about meditating. Yeah, I looked at the app and stuff.
It's called Tinder. If
stop.
You're looking for the app that connects with the aliens. Just saying.
Go ahead, Joe. I was busting your chop.
That's okay. But at the end of the day, you know, to do some of the things that they put out there, it takes a lot of practice and a lot of discipline, just like any athlete in any major sport.
I agree with you 1,000%.
You know, so that if it's going to happen, it probably, you know, could be done. I mean, there have been studies where, you know, the one physicist who did the whole thing about positive energy affecting water molecules when they freeze.
Totally. Yes, and that was in What the Bleep, yes.
I do it
to my frogs. I go to my frogs every day, and I say love. And they've been around for over 10 years.
Well, there you go. So, obviously, you can exude love just like
they're,
happy.
They're underwater frogs, just so everybody knows.
Oh, okay. But...
And I only feed them, like, once a week.
Once a week?
That's it.
Do you feed them happy food?
No, I feed them, you know... I feed them love. No, I feed them, you know, the fur pellets, but, you know, I feed it with love. Go ahead.
So, I think you'll agree with me, like, that based what they put out there about affecting different forms of reality and different energies, and that if these alien races are highly evolved and can do that, you know, then they can basically turn around and control things that are faster than the speed of light.
Leanne, anything? I know. I hear the sigh before it's you sighed.
No,
she just doesn't buy it. She's, you know.
Look, what it comes down to is what they talk about, you know, the different dimensions. That you can't. A person in the fourth dimension can't explain his reality to somebody in the third dimension because they can't visualize it. They can't perceive that other dimension. So how can we begin to perceive and realize that until we go to the point where we have that experience? Look, and I've done isolation tanks and other different things when I was in college and stuff, and there was a point where I was doing meditation and experienced, you know, had out-of-body experiences and stuff, and so I think there is some basis for that, and I think we're far from being, we're so consumed by our real world, by stuff. Lord knows there wouldn't be storage units if we weren't consumed so much by stuff, that we really need to disassociate ourselves and be more awake and conscious of what's around us than what defines us.
Yeah, but you said you've had outer body experience. Have you ever had any outer burrow experiences?
Maybe.
Those are harder to have. Because nobody wants to come to the ass end of Queens. Just saying. Joe brings up a really good point, but I think we need to make the distinction between the hierarchy of needs and consumerism. You know, the consumerism, which is what America has been running on for the last, I don't know, I'm going to conservatively say 30 to 40 years, where, you know, he or she who dies with the most toys wins, where we don't make anything, we just buy things. I think that is separate from the needs for food, clothing, and shelter. And we forget that in this country that we proclaim is the best in the world, we have people who have fallen through the cracks. You cannot be concerned or even reach for a meditative higher consciousness when you don't know where your next meal is coming from.
Listen, but it's even more than that, because that goes into the mental mindset of consumerism and what some of these people believe, kind of thing. I mean, look, you know, when you see in, and as they're talking about now during the coronavirus pandemic, how it took so long for them to acknowledge how it was influencing and what it was doing in different communities. You know, we've got a CVS on every corner. We've got all these fast food places. First of all, we're not even eating good. We're eating bad. And we throw away so much food. I'm sure, you know, you and I and Mike, after we've done a radio show and we've been in Manhattan and you walk down the street and it's garbage day and you see all the garbage bags filled with food from the Starbucks, from the McDonald's, from Popeyes, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, every...
First of all, I do not look at the Popeyes garbage bags. Clearly, you've been eyeing them.
Why? You feel tempted?
You don't have to look. They're clear plastic bags.
I'm not arguing.
I know, and that's
Joe.
But that's what it comes down to. We don't. Why would we think when we see all these commercials on television as well? Okay, that are coming into our home for these fast food chains. Why would we even take a moment to think about those who might be going hungry at night? When we see all these commercials on TV for reverse mortgages or for Lowe's or for Home Depot and you see these homes and real estate, why would we ever think about the people who are homeless, who are living in shelters? Not only are we consumed by these images coming into our homes that are trying to get us to participate in the consumerism, it's deadening us to the actuality and possibilities of what exists outside of our small, meager little realms.
Well,
so therefore,
I will tell you, that is what this pandemic is uncovering in a way,
yeah, absolutely,
that all the
absolutely,
voices
absolutely
could not do before. Just the idea, the concept of sheltering in place is privilege, because homeless people are not able to do that. Domestic violence victims are not able to do that. And,
yeah, and if they are
right,
able to do that, there's been an increase in the calls for assistance due to,
yes.
Well, of course, there are states where they had to ban alcohol because there's such a high rate of domestic violence. Yes, they did. There are a number of states where they've done that.
Okay, I'm about to reach for my glass and take a sip just to make myself.
But you don't
feel
see, that's your privilege. Yeah, you see, you got privilege. You don't think about the
privilege
of being in big city.
So here's the thing, though. If we're so blind, as this pandemic proves, to all this many things that humanity faces, that some of us who aren't even privileged but maybe just slightly better off than our neighbor, at what point do you think that we can even achieve the state of being where we could communicate if these aliens
all right,
are...
But now
thank you.
Now you're sounding like Leanne. I mean, she has no faith in humanity.
I'm just saying that
Klaatu Barada Nictu.
But for what he talks about in the documentary that we need to do to, you know, achieve that and reset the world, etc. There are so many other things that prevent us from going to that next step and coming awake, because we're not even awake to the plight of those that surround us. So,
listen, we're not even awake to the plight of humans. Yes,
we are not ready. We are not ready for extraterrestrial contact. One of the opening questions in the documentary, and I apologize that I see it to its conclusion, but one of the opening questions was, how do we develop a relationship with occupants of UFO? And I clutched my pearls. Yes, I'm wearing some. And I couldn't believe this was a serious question. How to develop a relationship with the occupants of their own homes? We are so bad at connecting with one another, our own homes, in our own neighborhoods, in our own communities, in our own states, in our own world. We're still defining this virus by nation. When it's not, this is not about nationality. This is not about geography. This is about humanity. And we are still defining the fight.
We're defining, not only are we defining the virus by nationality, we're defining, and those who are in power are defining the care you get by your political affiliation, by your cultural affiliation within the same country. So that's what we're dealing with. Well, I do want to say that you are listening to Night Shift. I'm here with Joe Massiri. Joe Massiri?
Thanks,
you're still here, right? Okay. I'm going to play the trailer for Close Encounters of the Fifth Kind, which is the film that we've been discussing, which is an interesting film. I think it's interesting if you believe, and it's an interesting film if you don't believe, because it brings up a lot of points, a lot of aspects of humanity, a lot of things that really go along the lines of life is like science fiction, because there are a lot of things that are happening every day that it's hard to believe that this is what's happening. It's hard. You know, I know for some people it's like, I can't believe this is my country. Well, no, I totally believe this is this country. But it's hard to believe that, wow, we're just letting this all go down. I mean, racism, it's amazing watching some of, you know, we knew that police were being abusive before. And we knew that sadism was, you know, rampant. Sadism and racism was rampant within the police department. Now, in a time where we've given up more civil liberties than ever, I'm just seeing so many shocking stories. I'm seeing, I don't know if you remember the story about the doctor who just was upset about some kids not social distancing and he just chokes out this black girl. I don't know if you saw that one. It's just disturbing. I'm going to play this trailer now and we're going to come back to Night Shift.
The question is often asked, when will UFO disclosure happen?
These lights, they keep coming together?
The answer is, it has.
The New York Times revealed the existence of a secret government program to investigate UFO sightings.
This is a very complicated story. I have put a briefing together for every president since Bill Clinton. Interplanetary war. This is the next big thing that they want the public to be afraid of.
This is a national security imperative.
We must have American dominance in space.
But it's all a lie.
The national security state, they want to establish a planetary government by spinning that this is a threat.
One set of facts, two narratives. The threat isn't extraterrestrial. The threat is covert human.
The Close Encounters of the Fifth Kind protocol, developed by Dr. Greer, is the most dangerous information he has released to the public. Human-initiated communication with extraterrestrials is possible.
All of us are going to know the truth. This is our moment.
We have the ability to change life for the better.
Consciousness isn't limited by space and time. What I'm doing with CE5 is the foundation for the relationship between humans and these extraterrestrials.
The implications are absolutely profound. It shows consciousness does affect reality.
A critical mass of people can shift an entire civilization. But the intelligence community don't want the public to know. They say, what's in it for me? It's easy. A new world, if you can take it.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Joe Masseri, I have a final question for you about aliens and all of it. And then I have a final question for you as well, Leanne. Have you had any encounters in your life? Have you had any unexplained phenomena that has, made you so open? Or are you just that kind of guy?
I haven't had any contacts with extraterrestrials, but I've had.
I mean, you did do the show with Byron a few times, so.
Well, yes, he's definitely. I wonder about Byron. He may be an extraterrestrial.
I don't wonder. Byron is an extraterrestrial.
I just don't have the empirical proof yet that he is. So, I'll try to get a blood sample the next time and send it out.
That's the only way to convince Leanne. She needs empirical proof.
I asked for a hair sample, but he doesn't have that much left.
So you've had no experience. So what makes you so open to the possibility?
Well, just from seeing some different kinds of specters and ghosts, encounters like that. I mean, I believe that if we look at it to some degree, that energy is neither created or destroyed within the confines of our universe. If we had a way to find out whether or not it's true, and having read Dr. Brian Greene's book on string theory, I have this thought that I think that maybe the soul, or what makes us uniquely us, is somehow tied or connected to string. So if that's the case...
So you think you're a puppet? You think you're a puppet?
No, that's a very childish view.
Oh, sorry. Sorry. Sorry.
But... You know, I mean, there are measurable differences of certain things that when a person passes. So what's not to say until we could prove it otherwise that the basic element of consciousness that leaves is somehow tied into string, that our unique energy that makes us is part of the string theory of physics. And that would also tie into the alien.
Joe Masseri.
What's going on with that? So there you go.
You tie it into everything. I like it. String Theory and Joe Masseri. That's the name of the album.
Joe Masseri's first album. String Theory and everything.
Theory. String Theory and Joe Masseri. That's what I like. Leanne, I do have a question for you. Have you are so adamant, you explain why you're adamant about aliens and whatnot, but I know you haven't seen the film, but would you find it hard to believe that the type of contact or the type of consciousness we'd have to reach to make contact with other beings would have something to do with meditation and calming the mind and focus and all that? Would that surprise you in terms of your view of that type of thing?
I think that is a very human conceptualization of what's needed. It might surprise you. I just celebrated my 1,000 day anniversary, meaning I've meditated for 1,000 days in a row. An app on my phone. So I am not unfamiliar with the practice and what it can do for you.
But you've only done it 1,000 times.
Only done it 1,000 times.
And only done it 1,000 times. What do you know?
Changed me. Please don't steal my joy. So again, I think that is a very human conceptualization. But I will go so far as to acquiesce. I will say, okay, fine. There are aliens. I mean, the universe is so incredibly large that I'm willing to go with an agnostic view. Who knows? But I'll take it a step further. Perhaps there are aliens, but our planet is considered the short yellow bus of the universe because we can't get it together as a species. So other aliens bring their children here to observe our behavior and go, this is what happens when you don't stay in school. This is what happens when you don't evolve.
Anybody here?
Yes.
You've been listening to Night Shift, and that this is WBAI, and this is public radio. And as you know, we need your support. We need your support ongoingly. If we want to stay here, if we want to stay on the air, if you're enjoying the conversation, if you're enjoying the music, if you're enjoying the back and forth, if you're enjoying the information, if you're enjoying the awareness of these two films and all the thought that they may provoke, make a pledge right now to WBAI to, in the name of Night Shift specifically, which would be great. You know, whatever you can do, if it's $25, great. If you want to do something even better, become what they call a WBAI buddy. And all that really means is that you are pledging monthly a certain amount. It can be whatever you can afford. It can be $20 a month, $10 a month, $15 a month. But if you could do that in the name of Night Shift, because this is a value to you, especially in this time, I'm hoping, and Joe Masseri, I'd like your opinion on this, but I think radio has probably made a resurgence. I mean, podcasts have been exploding, but do you think radio, it is a way to, you know, there's only so much TV I think you can take. You know what I mean? I'm wondering if radio is making a resurgence.
Well, the other thing too is that when you go into many homes, even, you know, we were talking about differences in communities as such. There are so many, you know, neglected, underprivileged, etc. communities that still they don't have Alexas. They have radios, and you know, they don't have cable television. So during the day when they're at home and they're trying to get through their day, oftentimes they still turn to their radios as a source of news and information. And hopefully in this time of crisis, they're getting tons of news and information, but also for some entertainment and distraction. So, yeah, you know, the airwaves don't cost anything. It costs money for that internet connection. It costs money for that Spotify subscription. You know, radio is probably one of, and I would say still is, one of the first line defenses. I mean, look, they were even talking about mail. Mailing to communities. Mail and leaflets still being, you
Listen,
know.
You know, I got to say something. I'm going to add to what you were saying about just radio, public radio, you know, free radio. You know, here's the thing. You get ads everywhere. Everywhere. Everything you touch. Okay? Your computer, your phone, you're getting ads. Your email, you're getting ads. You're being sold. You're getting ads everywhere. Except on public radio. Mm-hmm. There are no ads. Mm-hmm. There are no advertisements. There are no come-ons. There's nothing telling you, hey, you need to buy this. You need to get into debt on that. You need to do this to feel better. We are public radio, radio for the people, by the people. We do what we do because of our commitment to community. So we ask that you do what you do for the same reason. Leanne, did you want to say anything about public radio and just the lack of ads, the idea that something you get for free with no strings attached?
It is not the norm. And so I think people have to remember how special and vital this is. You know, again, we are bombarded 24 hours a day, 7 days a week on how our lives can be better if we buy this toothpaste, this car, this face wash, and how we in and of ourselves are not enough, as opposed to having sort of direct, uncorrupted, uncorporatized information shared with us. And that has always been and will continue the value that WBAI and the shows on WBAI brings to its listening audience. And particularly now, that service cannot be overstated or undervalued.
Just in case you're wondering, you are listening to a rebroadcast of a Night Shift show from 1 year ago. So stay tuned. Hopefully you're enjoying this little time capsule of Night Shift and hearing what the world was like 1 year ago, 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 1 year ago. I heartily concur. So, I do want to move on a little bit though to say that there are a lot of things that, we may have been taking for granted for a long time that we may not have. And I just think that, you know, we're definitely headed into a new age. I'm sure we'll be doing more shows on it, but we're into a new age where just like past plagues have changed the civilization, our civilization is changing. Unfortunately, like you said, it's revealing all these things. And we also realize what we have to do to fight against the fix that's already in, the fix that's about to go in, you know, with the census and gerrymandering. You have to see this documentary that we've been talking about, Slay the Dragon, like see it just for your own education. And, you know, we have to consider a little bit bigger picture. You know, what should we be doing? You know, we've got all kinds of technology to do all kinds of things. What should we be doing with our advancement? What could we be doing? As Leanne said earlier in the show, like, well, if we're all one people, like, what if we all were helping? What if power was based on how much you could help? That's like a Pixar movie, actually. But I'm just saying, this is what we're talking about here on the show. So, if you enjoy Night Shift, make a pledge. You can go to WBAI.org, and there are a lot of ways to do it. Or you can go to give to WBAI.org and just make a pledge. All right, you know, one thing I did want to say, I have to say, I saw a really good meme about, somebody did a meme about, you know, what if the aliens came, and how immediately, you know, sellers would be like, you know what's really out of this world? The sale this weekend, you know, like they'd immediately grab onto it, and it would just be become part of what we're just talking about, and a way to sell you the fact that aliens have come and made contact. So, do you agree with that?
Well,
absolutely.
It would be alien happy hour.
Exactly. Right away.
I get some out of the world savings.
Right.
I was on the website for Dr. Stephen Greer. Back in October last year, they actually had a Six Nights Under the Stars with Dr. Stephen Greer, you know. And
I totally would have gone. So, listen, I plan to download the app, make contact with the aliens, and bring back information here for the show.
Well, the app is pretty expensive as far as apps go.
Is it?
$9.99.
Oh, wow. Ooh. All right. Well, I'm going to try and use my press. Get some press credentials to the app and start making contact with the aliens. $10 for to make contact with the aliens? Is that the deal?
Well, it's a little bit more than that. It's got stuff for like gear that you should have if you're going to go out and, you know, try to do a meditation and do it.
Right.
A library for materials, a whole bunch of stuff. So,
once again, so much easier if you guys just went on Tinder. Aliens your heart can desire. Right there for the taking. Tinder, Bumble, Cupid, OkCupid, whatever it is. You know, if you want that alien experience, you do not have to wait, Jim. I'm sorry, Joe, I know you are married, so my apologies. No disrespect to you.
No, he's not married. He's not married. He's just committed.
Exactly.
Same difference. No disrespect to your committed beloved.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
That's true. He's just committed. All right, so yes, I did have a couple questions though about. Wait, don't even go there. I did have a couple questions for you though, Joe Masseri and Leanne, before we leave here. Besides, how can people find you? Let's give out some info. How do people find you, Leanne?
people can find me. My website is veryfunnylady.com, but that's also how I exist on Twitter and Instagram and on YouTube. I'm trying to build my YouTube presence. I'm posting things regularly now. There are some very funny clips. And I am Leanne Lord Comedy, and Leanne Lord is spelled L-E-I-G-H-A-N-N-L-O-R-D Comedy. And that's on YouTube.
And Joe, how do people find you?
Twitter, Facebook, and on the World Wide Web at fearsmag.com.
All right.
And it's fearsmag.com.
There it is, fearsmag. So I had a couple of corona thoughts I was going to ask you guys. do you believe, like, do you see there being, like, besides the obvious price gouging and, you know, everybody's making masks and profiting and people, all these people he paraded out that were like, yeah, I'll be getting a contract to make, what am I making? Yeah, yeah, all those people he brought out on the Rose Garden. Do you see this, us forgetting the message of this and it becoming commercialized in some way, like just some kind of a, you know, sitcom, you know, besides Black Friday, there's, you know, Corona Monday, you know, I mean, do you see this being forgotten, or do you really see this having long lasting effects? That's I guess what I'm asking you both.
I think
you can't go back to the way things were before. The problem becomes, what do we learn from this, and what do we do moving forward?
Right. That's my question. Do we learn from it, or do we just contextualize it and normalize it like everything else that's going on?
I think there would be people aplenty that want to forget. And so will allow themselves to do so and be swept up in the corona holiday. Whatever. They'll have the t-shirt, you know, eyes. There will be a significant number of us, and I wish I could remember this comedian's name to her, but she said, we are destined to be those grandparents like, why are they wiping down? Why is grandma wiping down groceries with Clorox? And mom and daddy gonna go, oh, they survived the corona, baby. That's why they do that. So we're gonna have some ingrained behaviors in us. We're not gonna hug nobody.
I'm sure also too, like when my daughter has children and you know, they're in the house and they're on their phones and they're being bored kind of thing, or they're not going outside, she's gonna be one of those parents who'll say to her kids, you know, it was a time when we couldn't go outside because of the coronavirus and we had to stay in.
That's the sitcom. That's the sitcom joke. Oh, grandma.
Yeah.
She was, you know, and I'm saying, do you think we'll really get it, or it'll just fade like everything else does?
Everything fades. Pearl Harbor. That, I mean, that's December 7th. What does that mean? How many people are around that still truly remember that? Veterans Day, unless you have, you know, a veteran in your family or you served, what does that really truly mean to you? It's a day. It fades.
I mean, look what they've been going through with the anniversary of the liberation of the Holocaust camps and the Holocaust Museum and in Israel and the Jewish Society over here, you know, because it was such a tragic and such an atrocity. The whole idea of their important message is never forget. You know?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, no, I agree. And I think, you know, there are a number of things, you know, again, from that science fiction standpoint, human beings need to, every culture needs to learn from the other culture and build a better culture. You know, there are definitely cultures and economies that are better than ours because they realize certain things from our mistakes and the mistakes of other countries. You know, the more quote unquote modern, you know, I don't even have to get into all the places, you know, that, oh, it's only got a population of whatever, but they have this unique way of doing such and such, and everybody's got blah, 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 and everybody, and they take care of everybody, and everybody's happy. And you're like, wow, okay. It's a recent culture. So we and you can, again, this can be the last thing I guess we can talk about, but, you know, we could as learn from the mistakes of all the other cultures and become better, but that doesn't seem like science fiction. That seems like fantasy.
That's not really what we do now. Because remember,
we've
turned inward. We've become xenophobic. We've become more make America great again. That was one of the initial failures of how to deal with this pandemic. The World Health Organization, I believe, had a test. And America went, nah, we good. We'll make something. The CDC, nah, we're going to make something. And it didn't work. So, yeah, that's not the direction that we're going. I'm sorry.
I mean, look, there could be this whole thing now where we have people who have had the virus and, you know, if you can't contract it again, like the common cold, because it mutates, but, you know, the people who were infected and those who weren't infected and that could set up a whole nother stigma and who knows what.
Well, let's put it this way. There's a lot of information out there, and, you know, they say there's 8 strains now of the virus since its inception, and it's just sort of information overload. I know people who don't listen to the news anymore. They just can't, you know, what's the point? You know, and I understand that. I see them fighting about, oh, what are the real numbers of deaths, and is this, are they being reported correctly? It's like, so what? Who, what? Is that what we're arguing about? Like, are the deaths correct? You know, and I understand all the paranoia and the distrust of government. You know, I think that it's all completely valid. I wonder, you know, I go back to what Jeff Gomez says. I do think the narrative needs to be that we come together. But, you know, I guess we're still in the second act because, you know, hopefully in the third act, like, humanity comes together and we start to realize and there's a new, you know, the other irony for me here is that I wrote about this in my James Scott scenario, that it was after an event similar to this that they created laws for the entire planet, planetary laws, and they created an organization to enforce those laws called the Planetary Law Enforcement Agency.
Yes, but then you can have somebody like Donald Trump in the office who turns around and totally does away with all those laws by signing an executive order.
See, don't try and write my story. But no, and I'm with you. This is just all like we're way – Philip K. Dick is writing with Stephen King and, you know, maybe Margaret Atwood. So –
Throw in a little Ender's game just for fun.
Look at all the stuff that he's been doing while people are so consumed with the coronavirus.
And as she said, what nationality it is. Well, here's what I do want to say. If you've enjoyed Night Shift, you can find us at lifeislikesciencefiction.com. You can find us on Facebook, NITESHIFT. That's Night Shift. We have all kinds of Life is Like Science Fiction up there for you. And you can also find us on Twitter, NITESHIFTZ. So, Joe, what about Corona products? What do you think about all these people with Corona products? Do you think that's just tone deaf? What's your thought?
For a minute, you were saying what kind of Corona product?
I said there's all these people out there with Corona products. Is that just, you know, do you think it's tone deaf? You know, besides masks, people have all kinds of, like, you know.
Listen, there's guys in churches who, you know, pastors who are selling products that, you know, who was trying to sell
the test, yes.
And another guy was selling the silver solution that was supposed to help with the virus. So, you know, they're all a bunch of snake oil salesmen.
And that's it? That's your view?
But sympathetically, what else have we been trained to do? As a consumer culture, how else do we respond to crisis? There must be a product for this. How do I monetize this? What is my brand during the pandemic?
What is my brand during the pandemic?
For the last 20 years.
Yes. Social media. What is my brand? Oh, I eat this every day. I'm cooking. I'm learning to cook. I'm playing with my cat.
Listen,
hey,
they need to rename common sense uncommon sense.
But you just watch what people post and how they post, and I am not exempting myself from this. I was raised in America. I'm a second generation American. I'm completely all in this in ways that I like and don't like. But what is the pathology of how we've been taught to rise to the level of a crisis? Well, there's got to be some monetization. There's got to be, how do I sell myself, or how do I fortify myself? So gun sales have gone up. People are rampaging stores for stuff. I mean, we this is what we've been trained to do, not respond with any sort of empathy and community and socialization. Now, is that happening? It is. But your own government tells you that they are not in the business of standing on the corner handing out tests to make sure that their constituents are healthy, that should give you pause. That is exactly what the government should be doing. But they have other agenda?
Absolutely. But not only that, when citizens stop becoming constituents, you know, that's when, you know, like the gerrymandering we were talking about, that's really when they really don't have to care. They can do whatever they want. They can poison the water, like in Flint, and like, yeah, okay. How could that still be going on? And
well, now we get into the America's caste system, which nobody wants to talk about. There's the quote unquote white, middle class, upper middle class, wealthy level of care. And then there's everybody else. Brown people, immigrant people, women, anybody who is any way vulnerable. You think you're going to get some help? Are you serious? Have you been here? Are you new? It's a different existence.
Well, here's the thing. It's sort of like, you know, I feel, you know, as someone who doesn't gamble, I feel we're preoccupied with gambling. And gambling is just...
You're a black man in America. You gamble every damn day. You leave your house, sir. No.
Can I finish?
Yes, you can. Just acknowledge reality.
Okay, can I finish?
Yes, you
what may. I'm saying. Okay, so I don't gamble. Okay, and like I said, and I feel gambling is selling hope. And I don't just believe in the whole concept of gambling, but the reality is that we like you said, we've been forced to gamble. You know, good health, eating the way we have, and like Joe was saying, you know, and everybody has said that of any, you know, even Fauci says, you know, Americans are not the healthiest. You know, we've it's just something we don't take care of. It's something that we take for granted, okay? And something we gamble with. We didn't realize we were gambling, but we were. And we were gambling with the whole idea of dismantling all these things when Trump got in office and they dismantled all these things that had to do with disease and the CDC and the people that were in China and everything that would have made us prepared. It was a gamble. It was a gamble to defund those things and you know, divert them to whatever else and line our pockets or our constituents or whatever the agenda was. Okay, it was a gamble. Okay, and so to me, this is what we've been doing as a society. It's just every part of our culture is just a gamble. It's a stock market. All our economy is based on this, on gambling. It's all a gamble. And that's part, I think, of the problem here.
But hey, and let's not forget that they legalized in a lot of states the gambling, digital games and stuff, so that there are a lot of people who don't have money to begin with.
Distraction. It's all a distraction. It's the selling of hope. It's a distraction.
But here's the thing with that. I predict that this will be the next vapor, the vaping crisis redone. All these people who are going to be spending their money on these games and not have any money then, and then there's going to be called for legislation again. It's going to happen.
Joe, are you a crackpot or a prophet?
I don't know. We'll see what happens. You tell me.
Leanne, what were you going to say? Did you have any prophetic?
I think when you talk about gambling, some people have the odds stacked against them more so
absolutely
than other people.
But
you
they
know,
don't even realize
fact,
it.
Hold on.
Because they keep gambling.
About that we don't eat well. Now let's break that down economically and geographically. We have food deserts in this country. Guess where they are? Some of them are rural, but most of them are in urban and in classically black and brown communities. So it's not that you don't want to eat the apple. It's that you only think there's only one kind of apple. You've only seen a Macintosh. You don't know that there's a Granny Smith. You don't know that there's a yellow apple. You don't know that there are various brands of apple because you only get what's allowed into your particular food desert if you even have that at all. Or what's cheap,
well, I would think
potato chips or
I would,
an apple. So come on now.
Or,
you can't always blame
how about,
people for their choices
how,
when they're not even given the appropriate choices.
How about McDonald's apple pie?
Delicious.
Delicious.
What's your point? That's 99.
I'm just throwing it in there. I'm saying that's available. Exactly. See, that's what I'm saying. Apples right there. Right there. Apples.
Wow. Really?
See, I'm disappointed because I know Mike Sargent saw both of Morgan Spurlock's.
Listen, I interviewed Morgan Spurlock. I interviewed him for it. What are you talking about? I'm only busting, you know, her chops because it's so easy. She can't touch me because she's in another place.
Dude, I will get in my car. I ain't been nowhere in weeks.
Yeah, whatever. Whatever. I'll be in the mask in the shadows.
Let me bring my cat.
Well, I want to thank you both for spending so much time here on the air. And Night Shift is here every Monday from 10 p.m. till midnight here, where life is like science fiction. Joe Masiri.
Mike Sargent. Leanne.
Do you have any final words of wisdom?
Well, hopefully we'll see everybody again soon on the other side.
The other side. Leanne, any final words of wisdom? After 1,000 days of meditating.
Yes, after 1,000 days of meditation. Hey, y'all, I'll see y'all at McDonald's getting an apple pie now that Mike put it on my phone. Let's not all rush out at once. Let's be responsible.
All right. Stay tuned. So hopefully you've enjoyed this episode of Night Shift. It is a time capsule because it occurred exactly 1 year ago. We were only a month in on the pandemic. Trump was still in office and everything we spoke about has passed. And our predictions are interesting.
Extinction Diaries. The Gobi Bear is the only bear in the world that lives exclusively in a desert. The Gobi is also the world's rarest bear and critically endangered. There are less than 40 in the wild and none known to exist in captivity. The Mongolian government is dedicating funds and territory protection to stop the extinction in one of the world's most inhospitable environments. Giant sand dunes, ice canyons, raging wind, cold and heat are all characteristics of the Gobi Bear's home, and it is human activity again driving the race to extinction. International mining operations are polluting the desert while extracting coal, copper, and gold from the region. And seasonal grasslands, vital to all wildlife, is being destroyed by overgrazing domesticated livestock. Gobi bears travel great distances from oasis to oasis, and because humans, including poachers and illegal miners, depend on the same oasis water supplies, the outcome for the bears is often tragic. In 2014, the Gobi's numbers fell to under 30 and have since risen. There is hope. They need more love. My name is Rising Moon, and this is a Small World Radio production.
Hi, this is Doug Wood from Green Street, heard every Tuesday morning here on WBAI. At most radio stations, the focus is on advertising, ratings, and profits. Here at WBAI, the focus is on people and issues. We don't have advertisers, and while that provides us with editorial freedom, it also means we depend on your financial support to stay on the air. Please join Patty and me by becoming a member of WBAI, ensuring this station's future and your 24/7 access to the truth. It's easy and quick. Just visit WBAI.org. And thank you.
Hey, this is Baby K.
And this is DJ Kyle McNeil.
Of The Sweet Spot. And we are